Welcome to the Smuggler's Den.
You will never find a more wretched hive of scum and villainy. We must be cautious.
Brought to you by Game Empire Pasadena, a great friendly atmosphere for playing a wide variety of games and for purchasing all of your gaming needs. Check them out online at GameEmpirePasadena.com. Welcome to the Smuggler's Den, Season 2, Episode 2. I'm Tiny Grimes, and I'm joined as always by...
I'm Ben Tully. Be sure to check us out at our various online presences, including on Facebook at The Smuggler's Den. And feel free to email us at any point at thesmugglersdenpodcast@gmail.com.
Feels so good to be back. So good we invited another guest.
Right. I don't know if he's going to... Can we keep calling him a guest if he's going to be on every episode?
Yeah, we can for a while. Just to keep him at an arm's length.
Oh, is that what it is? Just in case he turns on us.
Exactly. Because this, you know, we're the Sith. There's only supposed to be two of us. He's going to murder one of us if he becomes a regular.
I'm putting my finger to my nose and saying, not me.
That's fair. All right. I'm not. I say bring it on, real deal. So we're joined today by... Who are you?
It is, again, Neil. I go by Red Squadron K on the forums, and it's good to be back for a new year of Star Wars.
So, a number of people have noticed, and I'm not sure if you guys have noticed, that there seems to be a slight lag in product. Have you guys noticed that?
I don't know what you mean, Tiny. The Balance of the Force box only just came out.
That's true.
Aren't you excited about the Balance of the Force box?
Am I excited about it? No. No, I'm not excited about it.
Uh-oh.
But that's okay. I'm just not a huge fan of the challenge decks. I understand other people are, so that's great. I'm glad it came out. But it is a big lag. Last year we saw this with Game of Thrones, and a lot of people left the game for a while, and most of them came back. But so I think it's important to try to come up with ways to keep your interest during this period. We'll call it the dark period.
A dark time for the rebellion, perhaps.
There we go. So do you guys have any suggestions for our loyal fans of what we can do to keep our spirits high and to keep interest in our group in the game?
We could talk about how well we've been doing it at our store, but then I think we would be lying.
Yeah, the problem is this also coincides with the holidays, so it makes it even more difficult.
Well, I mean, it's difficult and not difficult. I mean, I guess I would be really upset if there was like a new Force pack out and I had been traveling for the last couple weeks and not been able to try and play it. There is that side of it. I mean, I feel like the unfortunate side of it is it only really works if your meta is larger than three or four people. But it comes down to trying and, you know, agreeing on some type of competitive format, right? There's the Season 3 tournament kits are out and about. I'm not sure if our store has one. We've been waiting on those kinds of things. Those things really kind of incentivize people to come and play. If you do it as something that's more of a long-term competition as opposed to like one tournament to win the one prize. You know, we've mentioned a bunch of times before how we have a league at our store. And that league lasts for a couple of weeks, 6 weeks. And then there's a winner decided at the end of that. So you have to participate in the league and the final event to win the prize, which has always been a really good way. I mean, our meta was the strongest when we were promising league prizes for new people coming in.
Yeah, that's true. And I think still the most important thing about growing and maintaining your meta is showing up every week, even if there's no product and playing. What happens is if you have a lull in product and then you kind of go, we'll just not play for a while. You know, some people drift off of your meta. You're not acquiring new people. I think it's really important to just keep at it and have your weekly get-together where you're always there that week, that time. Everyone knows, and people sort of gravitate towards that.
Definitely, and especially in the off times like this, you need to always be ready to jump on anyone who wanders by and kind of asks, oh, what are you playing? Say, oh, it's Star Wars, a card game, and here, let me show you a demo. And have decks ready that maybe aren't top tier, but are going to be a lot of fun and give them options to play with those really cool characters that they'll connect with and hopefully fall in love with the game.
Oh, so Sleuth Scouts?
Yeah, and the Ice Trompers.
I know, yes. When I was a child.
All of those major characters.
Yeah, I loved the Sleuth Scouts. I had like 20 of them, and I was like, if one day these become sort of overpowered in a game, I'm going to be so excited.
But it is really important to kind of encourage people. And I think there's, to some degree, there is a selling point for new people right now, because instead of them having to purchase, you know, a new force pack next month and be ready to play, you know, it's right after the holidays and maybe have a gift card or two, a little bit of extra spending cash. And you'd be like, look, you know, there's only this much to get in. It's not like you have to keep spending, you know, you don't have to even buy anything new until next month anyway. So
yep.
It's not the best way to sell a game, but.
I also think that it's actually a great time to help get new players into the game, because there's nothing on the line right now. I know right before Worlds, you know, people would sort of be like, hey, you know, I play a little Star Wars, and we're like, cool, come get your butt kicked, because we're testing elite top-level decks, whereas now there's a real opportunity there to scale back on what you're playing, really be even more open than you already are to new players and to letting them have a really fun time, because you're not worried about, you know, regional or anything. I mean, the meta's already solved right now. I mean, there's really nothing that new to do at the top level. At the mid and bottom levels, there's a lot of interesting space to be carved out.
Sure. I mean, I'm so sick and tired of playing again, trying to play a fairly competitive high-level Navy deck that spams out characters, and running in consistently to people testing out light side decks that use the Rebellion objective that has a New Hope in it.
Wouldn't consistently mean Neil?
Well, Neil, it wasn't Neil. It wasn't just Neil. Neil and Brian both showed up with decks in the consecutive weeks where I was like, oh, this Imperial deck's really strong. It only loses to one card. And then every time it's like, oh, you mean this one card? I'm like, what? Why? Why?
Because it's such a good card.
It is. If it was in a good pod, oh my.
Well, I mean, that's part of what's so fun sometimes about this downtime is I've been really trying to work again on a Leia deck to get it to work, and I've been trying to make Scum viable and kind of competitive on a higher level, and just trying out all of these kind of bizarre decks that we didn't have time for in the preparation for Worlds.
Yeah, I feel like this has got to be one of your favorite times. For me, it's one of my least favorite times, just being a tier one competitive deck guy. I get bored during these periods where the meta is pretty solved and I'm just sort of waiting, whereas someone like you, and I think Brian fits into this category of, they have a lot of fun just experimenting with crazy decks.
Yeah, definitely. The only thing that's better is experimenting with crazy decks that have brand new cards.
Yes.
That is the only thing that's better. I mean, I guess it makes sense then. You guys are probably pretty excited about the 2v2 format and things like that, because it allows you to expand on all these themes that are, you know, I haven't got a lot of 2v2 time, but I feel like it's got to be something where you can start playing some of those not tier one decks and having a lot of fun because they synergize well with a second deck.
Yeah, definitely. Even an example in Worlds, Tyler and I, one of my meta mates, played in the 2v2 competition. The first round, we lost a pretty rough battle against some guys who, one of them was playing just a Rebel Trix deck with Mon Mothma and Leia and an Ackbar that just came out of nowhere and wrecked us.
That's very interesting.
Tiny's so intrigued, but kind of not intrigued simultaneously.
Kind of, yeah. No, that sounds cool. I would like to use that as a quick segue to another idea for keeping your meta intact is playing 2v2. I feel like 2v2 is a great opportunity to sort of bring along newer players. So you can take a player and have them play with a really experienced player, pair up an experienced player and a not as experienced player, let them play together, and just make sure the competitive player doesn't dominate that player, but does kind of sort of walk them through some of the thought processes. And so this is a way, I think, for newer players to sort of get up to speed a little faster by seeing in action what a more experienced player would think about.
It's tough because I think that all of those reasons you said that it's good for new players is true, but it's also, I think, could be overwhelming for a new player, especially someone just learning the rules, that there's some extra weird things with 2v2 and controlling other people's units and the common reserve.
Yeah.
That can really complicate learning the game. But if you're already kind of familiar and know the basic rules, I think that it can really be good. But also just having four board states to keep track of is a lot.
I mean more someone who already knows the game and is just a low-level player in your meta and you're trying to sort of help everyone improve their game. I definitely agree. I don't think it's a way to introduce somebody to the game. All right, so I thought that we could take a look at the most recent set. And while there wasn't a lot of one versus one material in it, the balance of the four certainly does give us some new cards. So let's try to figure out, are any of these tier one pods, or at least are some of them pods that you guys are excited to try out when we get back from the holidays, get back to the shop? Do you have any ideas for decks, things like that?
Well, I mean, I'm still in the mode of trying to figure out if, being that they're limited one per objective deck, right? If there are any of these, you know, what are, you know, basically the only objectives that we have that are 2v2 based, or are any of them actually competitive in a 1v1 environment, even if they're not top tier, right? I mean, it's one of those things where, like, you know, it's so many of the abilities in these objective sets really benefit from having that second friendly player. And so it's like balancing, does this objective set have too many of those only benefits because there's a second player for it to be worthwhile?
Yeah, it is a tricky deal. I mean, it was a really interesting move they made. By making them all one-ofs, they could just release this box and say, you only have to buy one. Here's the plus side. But then the negative side is, anytime you only have one of a pod, it becomes difficult. You know, sometimes it's the right choice, but a lot of times it's either two or it's none. And so it makes it even more difficult to put in these possibly situational pods into a deck.
So I think we should go through them and then think about, if really quickly, not to
believe. I agree. Let's start with Rendar's Wrath. So we have a Smuggler's Den objective.
I don't think it's called Smuggler's Den.
I'm pretty sure they renamed it after our show. I could be wrong. It says, after an opponent declares only one unit as a defender, deal one damage to that unit. I'm going to go out on a limb here and say it's really strong.
Yeah. I mean, it keeps the chump blocking to a minimum, and if a unit does chump block, it does allow you to kind of put them in a tight situation.
Yes. It's very strong against if you're running like a sleuth deck and, you know, they only can block with their 1-2 cost guy. He only has 2 health or 1 health. You know, he goes to block, he takes 1 damage, you heat to battle him, the other one, he's gone.
So I think that overall this objective set is pretty good for 1v1. None of the abilities even in 2v2 seem that crazy good, except maybe the objective. But also none of them are very 2v2 dependent, so you're not losing a whole lot by throwing it in your regular deck.
I mean, the only real abilities that are triggering off being 2v2 is the additional blast icons that you can give Dash through his ability. Any player can trigger that. And so, you know, you can do it yourself. I mean, it would be really nice if, like, if you had a friendly player who could do it as well. And then the only other one is the zero cost event, which removes one focus from two different resource generating cards controlled by different friendly players. And so the wording on this allows you to remove one from one of yours. So it's not a completely worthless card, but it definitely is stronger in a 2v2 setting.
Yeah. I feel like this Dash is pretty underwhelming, actually. He's not bad, but he's basically 4 cost for 3 health, only 2 blasts. So he's okay. I feel like his text is kind of meaningless in 1v1. You can spend a resource to give him 1 unit damage. It's not that great. You have to spend a resource to do it. He's okay, I feel like.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like one of those things, because I think definitely this objective set is probably one of the more playable ones in 1v1. You know, there's not as many 2v2 dependent. It's not like hurting you playing this because, you know, you're drawing something that only has a 2v2 effect. But it's definitely one of the weaker pods for the balance of the force overall, because Dash, its main unit, is fairly humdrum in terms of his ability.
I would like to say, though, supporting fire, I think, is going to be amazing in 1v1 and 2v2. I think being able to have, say, Palpatine in your hand or Yoda in your hand, and then not putting them in the edge battle and putting this in instead in case you get twisted, is going to be a huge play that I could see making me do something like running two factions, each with one of these pods, just to get two copies of supporting fire.
Yeah, supporting fire is really strong. I've seen it in a few times that I've gotten to see it work. It's either the surefire kind of support card where you're playing it just in case, or it's the nail in the coffin. It's like it's one of those two. It's either like, I think I've won this, but I'll be sure and play this just so I have some flexibility, or it's the like, oh, you think you've won by playing all your cards in your hand because I've only played two. Actually, I'm going to play one more and win.
Once people get used to it, it'll be a little less good, but it definitely makes the choice harder as to whether it's a twist or a supporting fire. But I know that once or twice I've had a strong edge hand and they put down their supporting fire, I play like two cards, we reveal, and their face just falls because they're like, oh, I still can't beat his edge stack even with another card. But it's nice because you don't have to throw the other card in.
Yep. And I think it's also going to be really useful in those decks that say, win the edge battle by X to have an effect. This gives you a lot more control over making sure you win that edge battle by however much you need to win it by, without, you know, putting it too much.
That's a good point.
Okay, so I think our overall assessment is not a bad pod, not sure how much it'll be used. It seems good, or potentially good, in the Slough Scout deck. I don't think it seems that great just universally. I think it needs to be put with Slough Scouts to maximize its potential.
Agreed.
All right, let's move to the Rebel pod. Any thoughts on this one?
This is my favorite of the objective sets, at least for 1v1 play. I think that it's actually quite strong and can slot into a lot of Rebel decks.
Okay. Is there a specific card you're talking about, or do you think just overall there's enough good cards in the pod?
I think overall there's enough good cards. All of the B-Wings, I think, have very, very solid stat lines for their cost. With having two health and also the potential for a lot of objective damage, even though the neutral ones lose their ability in 1v1, I think that Blue Leader's ability, the objective, being able to trigger for yourself, it just makes up for it, and it's a solid way to put a bunch more damage into your deck.
And they do have essentially a one-cost force choke that has three edge icons, which is pretty good.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I like to think that, you know, Rapid Fire is really cool in 2v2, but they definitely made it a playable card in 1v1 by giving it the three force icons.
Yeah, I would often, if I was playing Sith, I know I would pay one to have a force choke quite often.
Sure.
But I got to say, I haven't really thought that much about the objective, but it says, focus this objective to have each friendly player look at the top two cards, add one to hand, put the other on the bottom of the deck. The more I look at this, the more I feel like this is a card I might play in every deck I build or very close to. The reason being that it just smooths out your deck quite a bit if you can have this ability going.
Right, if you don't need the resource.
Right, to be able to not only draw a card, but take the cards you don't want and stick them on the bottom, that's a pretty big deal to let you get to the cards you need to get to faster.
Yeah, no, it's definitely it's one of the more effective ways we've seen of going through your cards. It's almost as good as, well, it's not almost as good, it's slightly better than Dark Precog, because you don't have to discard a card.
Yeah, I really like this card, actually. Well, it's more to me that's repeatable.
Yeah, that's what makes it better. I mean, it costs you one as opposed to Dark Precog costing you nothing. But at the same time, you can, if you don't need the resource, you can do it multiple times and really use it to an advantage.
Actually, can you use it multiple times per turn? No, because its focus is objective.
But if you clear the focus off the objective. Yeah.
But just the fact that you can do it, say, like if they're playing a Sith deck that's not knocking out objectives quickly, or you have a Rebel deck in which you have like Hoth operations or something that's actually doing them damage, this could hang around for 2 to 3 to 4 turns. And in that time, maybe you're pulling a home one with it or a Falcon or some other card that's just winning you the game. So I will definitely be experimenting with this pod.
Sure.
All right, what do you guys think? Is this something that you're going to be playing with?
I mean, I'm going to try to use most of these objectives, I think, in 1v1 decks to see how they play out.
All right, well, let's take a look at the Jedi one then.
You say it so like, well, let's just look at the Jedi one.
Yeah, well, the Jedi one's a little bit less intriguing, in my opinion.
Right.
Anyone excited about the Jedi one? Let's start there.
I am. I want to be. It's just when I see the objective.
I want to be.
Yeah, I want to be as excited as I feel like some of the cards deserve, but that the objective is just blank in 1v1 really puts a damper on it. Because all of the rest of the cards are perfectly playable in 1v1. They lose almost nothing at all.
Yeah, it's interesting because I know we've played with this Shistoffenin Wolfman guy, and I scoffed at him, and he was actually really good.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but that was in a 2v2 match, and maybe we had out that objective. I don't remember. But I do remember thinking he was better than I thought he was going to be. But Force Cleansing, on the flip side, was much worse than I thought it would be. I thought that card was going to be insane, and instead it's okay.
Yeah, Force Cleansing is a little underwhelming, but the Obi-Wan and the Wolfman are pretty cool in 1v1, and especially looking ahead to the next cycle. They're just going to get more and more interesting with different tricks for the Force Struggle.
Yeah, that's true. We'll have to see if this Obi-Wan ends up getting played or not. Okay. Shall we move to the dark side then, friends?
Let's move to the dark side. Do you think we should start with the scum one? Because I know where I fall on the scum one.
Let's start with the scum one.
So I think the scum one particularly exemplifies an objective set that just, you know, just misses it, right? I feel like the big card in the objective set is A Price on Their Heads, which is a huge card in terms of cost. It has 4 force icons. It has a crazy ability, but really paying 6 for not capturing 2 units. You know, if you're only playing in 1v1 and you can only pay 6 to capture 1 unit, you know, there are times that that's going to be huge, right? But in terms of cost advantage, right, you're paying 6 to get rid of something that, you know, for the light side, there's nothing higher than 5.
The thing is, I'm totally fine with that card. Since it has 4 force icons, it's just an edge card.
Yeah.
So it might as well say edge 4, and that's fine. I'm totally fine with that. That's a very good card to me, actually. Still, I'm perfectly happy to draw that.
So then what do you think about the rest of the objective set then?
Well, I go back and forth on it. I really love the objective ability because it allows you to do some cool tricks and maybe get use out of some bounty hunters or mercenaries that otherwise wouldn't see as much play or wouldn't be as effective. But then the rest of the stuff is just solid.
I mean, I like the Trendishan security team ability. I think they're pretty pricey for what they are, being 3/3.
Yep.
I can see wanting to play them, but as I've personally always had issues with resources in scum decks, you know, thinking of paying 3 for a guy that I'm using solely on defense when I kind of have an advantage to do some more damage to attacking units. I'm kind of like, ugh. I know personally I probably won't get much out of this, though I'm sure I will be beaten by them effectively by other people. But punishing 1, I feel like, leaves a lot to be desired.
Yeah, but punishing 1 is the worst card in the pack, and as such, I think it's fine. I actually like this pot a lot looking at it more if it was a 2-of.
Sure.
If it's a 2-of, then you get to have a really good chance to get the objective itself, which is flat out bonkers. It's flat out amazing. And I actually think the Trandoshans would be really, really good in some sort of like defensive stall tactics deck where you're just sort of like, I'm getting a dial to 12. I'm not really going to be blowing up much, but guess what? You're not blowing up my stuff either because these guys get to attack you when they're not even in the battle. And I probably played them for free with mercenary support. And with mercenary support, suddenly Boba Fett, one cost for two health, doesn't look so bad.
For one phase, yeah.
Well, I mean, he comes in for the phase, he captures a guy, then he gets discarded. That's not so bad.
No.
Yeah, looking at the pod again, I think this pod would be so good if these Trandoshans were two edge icons. Then it would be like this massive edge pod because that's one of the things that Scum seems to be struggling with. So I feel like this pod is close. The more I look at it, not having a resource, not having edge icons on either of the Trandoshans, it's kind of iffy. Mercenary support, though, is really cool.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of having resources, let's move to the Navy one.
And what do you think, Neil? Okay.
That's a pretty elaborate thought.
Yeah, thank you for being so detailed about it.
I think that the reactions on Thunder Flare and the objective are really, really cool and very exciting, but the rest of the objective and even like the icons on Thunder Flare, I just don't think it's that good. It's nice to have two essentially neutral duty officers, the logistics officers, but overall, this is one of the more underwhelming sets for me.
Well, I mean, I guess I can see it being the case. I mean, again, you know, as much as I've been like, all of these objectives aren't really that good in 1v1. I'm kind of looking at it being like, well, you know, it's a 1-1 that gives you a resource that's not terrible. You're right. I think Thunder Flare's icons are a little underwhelming. For some reason, I always think of Star Destroyers, they should always have a ton of objective damage for some reason. And so this having, you know, three unit and two of them being edge dependent, you know, I'm kind of like, oh, I guess that's fine. 5-4 that does that, that's not terrible. It does have elite, which is nice.
Yeah, and I suppose its reaction kind of adds another objective damage, but...
Sure, definitely does. Yeah, this, we're all like...
This one to me is a 2v2 pod.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, like it's... Like the logistics officer is fine, but he's really cool in 2v2 because it says... If you play that unit under the control of a different one, that's when you get to trigger it. If you could trigger it from your own, I would actually like this pod a lot because it's two resource guys. I like that. But I agree. I think Thunder Flare is very underwhelming. Weapons Upgrade, again, is a 2v2 card because you get, I mean, if you want to get the replacement from it. It just feels like this is a 2v2 pod. I don't really think I'll be playing this in 1v1.
I am going to try it once, at least in a capital ship deck where I just play every single capital ship possible, but I don't have high hopes for it.
I mean, I feel like if all of these cards did the same thing in 1v1, I would still not love this pod, but I would like this pod. I would definitely experiment with it as it is. It will go to the end of my deck box with a big X on it.
Well, how do you feel about then, Tiny, the Sith objective?
I don't know. You got to give a man a minute. Come on now.
Ben, do you want to go ahead?
Sure. I would like to think that, I think I might have said this for all the objective sets at this point, or at least more than half of them, but I would say this objective set is one of the weakest in 1v1 from all the ones that come with Balance of the Force, which really makes me sad because I love Mara Jade.
Yeah, I know a lot of people love her, but she's just not so good in 1v1, I think.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I understand. Why do you think Mara Jade would be that much stronger in 2v2?
I don't think Mara Jade is. I think the objective set is just stronger in 2v2.
Okay, yeah,
and
no, I agree with that.
Strong enough in 1v1 to include it for Mara Jade.
Okay, because I kind of like Mara Jade. I think she looks good, even as she is... 4 cost, 3 health, a wide variety of icons, targeted strike. She gets the Luke ability. I mean, if you enhance her with like a lightsaber or something, I feel like she would be very, very strong.
Yeah, no, yeah, she would be great. But the other card, so the objective itself, which relies on having the common reserve, same with the Agent of the Hand, which is a 3-for-2 with bad icons and requires you having common reserve. It's gross. I mean, there are two of those cards in the objective deck, or in the objective set, right? And they're just, like, if I drew them in my hand, if I drew two of them in the same hand, I'd be like, well, I've lost this game.
Yeah, at least they're three costs, so they can't box loose. So that's cool.
Think the idea is that they have two icons, so they just become edge cards. But why are you then playing this set if they're just edge?
Right. I do like Join Me. I think Join Me is a cool card. It's not an amazing card.
It's pretty strong.
It's very limited. There's not that much you can hit with it, but really? Anytime you can...
I guess it's not. I guess it's character unit.
Yeah, that's what limits it substantially.
Mm-hmm.
But anytime you can take control of another unit, another player's guy, that's pretty darn good.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
I'll take your protect.
Go ahead. Guy. Which one?
Your Jedi Guardian. I'll take that guy. Thank you.
I guess Jedi Guardian would be okay.
Yeah, that's about the best one I can think of. Maybe a Wookiee, but...
Yeah, some Wookiees. I was thinking maybe the engineers, the battlefield engineers.
Maybe.
Sure. I mean, I don't know what you would do. I don't think there's too many. But yeah, have stealing their protect character ability, that would be a huge...
Yeah, that's right about there. The best thing, yeah.
That could pretty much win the game because they might be completely relying on that. They block with somebody thinking they're going to protect them. Oh, actually, I think you can only do it during
You can only play it during your deploy phase. Yeah.
It's still pretty good because it really limits their abilities. It also makes it so Palpatine has more protection. I think Join Me, especially depending on the meta, could be a good card. Combined with Mara Jade, who could be a good card. Supporting Fire is a good card. Agent of the Hand has two icons. I don't know. Are we leaning towards in the right situation?
I still hate the fact that the Agent of the Hand is a dead card when you draw it mostly. I mean, two icons just really isn't... They're okay. I mean, that's really... I mean, it's average, I'm sure, but it does have a huge swing, right? So if this was an objective set that you had with around the table and you could play Join Me to steal their protector and then get to trigger Vader's damage and then open it up for other damage that's coming...
Right.
That they thought they were going to be able to break. That's pretty cool, but...
I could see myself playing this in the right meta. It'd have to be something like that meta we had before where we were playing like the Guardians and then all those enhancements so that it was like everything was reliant on having your Guardians out protecting guys. If we come back to some sort of meta like that where you can just steal their Guardians, then maybe. But even then, it's only a one of. It's one in your deck. And that's just... One of just makes things so difficult to rely on, like, oh, this is going to be my tech against this meta. And you're like, there's one of it. Great. Okay. So what's our overall evaluation of these sets in a 1v1 environment? Keep in mind, we love the box as it fits in a 2v2 environment. It adds a cool new method of playing. If you're just... You know, you have three people, you want to get together, you want to do something different during this downtime. If you want to play 2v2, these cards are really strong. But in 1v1, if you were only a 1v1 player, would you be rushing out to buy this box?
I think if you're a competitive 1v1 player, yeah, you're still rushing out to buy this box because you have to have all the cards. But overall, for 1v1, I think that it kind of feels like this downtime. They're fun stuff to play around with, but if you're really preparing for a tournament, most of these won't make the cut.
What about you, Ben? What do you think?
I think that for me, yeah, will I rush out and buy it? Yeah, probably, because I'm addicted to this game and I want this game to do well. But am I going to be excited playing it all the time? Not right away. I haven't been that. It's not as crazy as some of the other times I've wanted to get my hand on the newest product.
Yeah. Okay. I think we should probably just wrap it up then.
Yeah, I hope everyone enjoyed the episode.
Thank you so much for joining us, Neil, the real deal, the deck wizard, the man of many nicknames. And until next time,
may the Force be with you.